This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australian TV is finally telling more queer stories, but this didn't happen overnight. It's the result of decades of persistence. And Damien O'Meara is a lecturer at RMIT, who's been researching the people who made that shift happen. Damien, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be speaking to you again, Warren.
Who were the, the pioneers or the trailblazers that started the shift?
Well, it's an interesting question. I spoke to 10 people. They certainly weren't the only 10. But there are people going back as far as the 1970s, like David Sale, who was behind Number 96, who started this work. And we certainly saw this amazing boom of representation in the 1970s that then fell away. But the people I spoke to included Julie Kelcher, David Hannum, Bevan Lee, Michael Lucas. You'd know Michael Lucas from The Newsreader, which is a current hit. Stephanie Westwood, who is at Orange Entertainment. You're probably going to stretch me to name a few more, but these are people who are behind some of Australia's like most popular television series that have included queer representation and have been working behind the scenes, in the example of Bevan Lee, for 40 plus years, getting these stories in front of us, as he did in small ways in the 90s and early 2000s and in big ways in the 2010s.
What happened after the 1970s? You mentioned that they started then, but then it dropped off.
Well, it's an interesting thing. Australian television was trying to kind of find its identity with a introduction of quotas and requirements for our commercial networks to have Australian-made drama. And one of the things that happened with this investment was a series of queer stories. So things like Number 96 and The Box and Prisoner were part of that boom. And we had this push for more representation because we were experimenting. But that content didn't always perform well internationally. And the big thing with Australia is we have a pretty small market here, but we do have a lot of opportunity to sell our content internationally. And in the 1970s, we weren't really being able to sell that as much as we would like. And there was a sort of conservative shift back by the end of the 1980s to not include as much queer content.
Were queer characters, I suppose, written into the scripts then, or were they sort of, put in quietly so and hoping that no one would notice, but they sort of made their way in there?
Number 96 was particularly bold. So they have the first gay kiss, the first positive representation of a gay man, the first trans woman played by a trans woman. The Box has the first lesbian kiss ever that we're aware of in the world. We beat the UK by 2 weeks. and Prisoner famously, I guess, can be associated with the rise of criminality and its representations of lesbian and bisexual women, but was pioneering for its time.
Now, we know that commercial TV, obviously, they're chasing the ratings. What kind of balancing act, I suppose, are queer creatives facing between being themselves and telling their authentic stories and also chasing the ratings and, wanting to be the stereotypical queer character?
Well, this is probably the most interesting finding that came out of the interviews that I conducted, is that there was this great kind of pragmatism and great in the kind of, significance of it, that everyone working in television, it didn't just have to be the commercial networks, it was the ABC as well, that they understood that it had to be commercial. So there's a sort of balance you play between kind of telling an authentic story, which we've had more and more opportunity to do, particularly since the 2010s, but also understanding that those stories have to have some kind of commercial edge and have to have a commercial appeal. And, it's those basics of storytelling, particularly in television, of finding the universal in the specific. And what we've found in these kind of conversations is that queer stories are now a way to tackle tried and tested themes in new ways, new perspectives, because we've told the love story a million times. We've told the kind of workplace drama a million times, but actually bringing in a queer perspective brings something new to it, and that gives us new ways to kind of appeal to new audiences. So it's actually becoming commercial in and of itself.
Damien, let's talk about bisexual characters. They're often written as either gay or straight, depending on who their partner is. What impact does that have on audiences, and why does that seem to persist?
Well, this is a really interesting thing. So there was a previous study I conducted with another researcher, Whitney Monaghan at Monash, where we looked at all the representations we could identify in Australian TV since the year 2000. And there was this trend of unnamed bisexuality. And you saw it in like soap operas where there'd be a straight woman and she'd be having relationships with men. And then she'd become a lesbian because she was having a relationship with a woman. And when that relationship ended, she was straight again because she was dating men. And thought of it as this very troubling trend because observably, well, that's a bisexual behavior. That's someone who experiences attraction to more than one gender, but it wasn't being named. And it's really rare that it gets named. Much, much rarer for men than women. Women were more likely to be named as bisexual. Men, there's only a very few examples. But the trend kind of helps persist this kind of bisexual erasure that, you know, someone is either gay or straight or lesbian or straight according to who they're in a relationship with. And it kind of perpetuates that myth that bisexuality erases bisexuality because people aren't seeing it on television. And certainly if you're a young person and you don't know any other bisexual people and you're experiencing those feelings, one of the first places you see it is on television. And so to see those feelings kind of erased would be, you know, pretty concerning for someone who's trying to understand their own identity.
And I can imagine too, you know, parents with kids watching it and going, oh, look, you know, see, it's just a phase. You'll go back to, you know, the other side.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It can reinforce stereotypes. It can reinforce kind of ideas from outside our community about how our community exists. And so, yeah, it can be really influential, particularly if it's, you know, mainstream commercial television that gets, you know, in some cases, millions of eyeballs on it. That's really impactful.
Now, one of the series that I love is The Newsreader on ABC TV, and the creator talked about fears that queer storylines would tank the ratings. Is that still a common fear behind closed doors?
I from what I've found, and so this study of 10 out gay, lesbian and bisexual television creatives and executives is part of a bigger study that goes beyond these 10, and there has been a big shift. It's no longer seen necessarily as a ratings killer, which is one of the ways that Michael Lucas, who created The Newsreader, said it was described to him when he was starting out in the industry. And certainly, I would argue Michael has been part of that shift. He has been bringing queer characters into his series for a long time, in both on the ABC, which we might consider is a bit more niche, and on commercial networks like Network 10. He's had several series that have had queer stories. Five Bedrooms is another one of his that has numerous queer characters. It explores non-monogamy. It digs into someone having a non-binary gender fluid child. Like, they really are pushing boundaries in a commercial space. So there has been a big shift, and I think that what has changed is the disruption that took place around the introduction of first digital channels and getting those secondary channels, but then streaming as well. But it doesn't necessarily mean that for Australian series that streaming is where we're seeing all of our diversity, because we're really seeing it still on the ABC. The ABC kind of drives most of this content for us.
We're chatting with Damien O'Meara, lecturer at RMIT, about the decades behind the scenes of queer labour that helped bring rainbow stories to our TV screens. Damien, you've used the term queer labour before. What does that mean and why is that important?
So this is a field that kind of has a background but is also really getting a lot more exploration now. It's the kind of work that goes into our rights, our visibility and our participation, both in the workplace and in society. And so I've been looking at this specifically in the frame of Australia's television industry, and there have been a lot of particularly lesbian and gay people and possibly bisexual people, though it has been harder to identify, working in television, particularly in writers' rooms, for a long time. And one of the things I found is that their kind of positionality, their perspective was not as valued in the past as it is now. And that there was this labor to getting queer stories on screen that was about, you know, this is an industry based on reputation. You know, it's all about getting something up that is going to be a hit. And so when someone's sort of pushing back against you to say, oh, I'm not sure if you'll be able to get the ratings you need if you put a gay man in this story, they're having to stake their career on it. They're having to kind of advocate for this, saying, well, I believe this will be a success, but also if it's not, you're going to blame me. And so there is a significant amount of labor into proving that these things will be a success. And sometimes it takes the shape of finding a guarantee against the risk. So Adam Richard and Julie Keltrup both self-funded proof of concept projects that then led to things getting commissioned. Or it's, you know, in identifying that kind of big celebrity name that's willing to be a star on the series, or it's going and getting existing IP and from a book or from a previous series and working that up into something new that's kind of got that guarantee of an audience behind it.
That's a lot of pressure, isn't it? Whether it works or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's an industry of reputation. So, and it's an industry of contracts. You're not, it's very rare to have an ongoing job in television, particularly if you're a creative. And so it's an industry that is built on having to say, well, I have to do what's going to be a hit. It's going to get the ratings we expect so that I can get the next job. And so it does end up being very incremental progress as you feel you can only push the wagon so far each time.
Damien, how has the rise of global streaming platforms changed the career pathways for queer creatives in Australia?
Well, I think there's something interesting here in that there's a lot more opportunity, but there's also a lot more challenge in kind of getting your start. One of the things that happened in Australia is that Screen Australia, one of our funding bodies and governing bodies, has brought in a requirement for their funding that if you're going to tell a story from an underrepresented community like ours, then a key creative has to come from that community. That's really exciting and really good, but there also has to be a bit of acknowledgement that there have not been as many opportunities for out queer people or out people who have intersectional experience, you know, queer people of colour, queer people living with disability, that they may not have had the opportunities in the past, and key creative is a very senior role on a project. And so one person in my broader interview set described it as there's a risk that we're going to be bringing people into a room to mine them for their experience, but maybe not build them up as much as they need to be built up as a career professional. And so the challenge we have here is if you get thrown in the deep end and it's sink or swim, well, that's going to create challenges for your future because, again, it's a reputation industry. It's an industry based on contracts. And if you're only getting a short contract for a short-run series and you're being thrown in the deep end with no one investing in your talent, then that can raise some concerns.
And not good for your self-esteem either.
No, but I did find that the queer creatives or lesbian, gay and bisexual creatives and executives I spoke to were specifically investing their own efforts into changing this. So it's another form of queer labour. So Michael Lucas is a great example. He's bringing up someone new on every project, not necessarily someone queer, but often someone from a background that's underrepresented. And it's very much built around the experiences he had when he was starting out, getting into, say, a script continuity role, which is a junior role in the writer's room, with an opportunity to maybe do a collaborative writer on an episode. And so it's about building people up and scaffolding those skills in. And Tony Ayres does a similar thing, you know, often having children's projects because it's easy to get people signed off and it's a great training ground to learn new skills. And so there's a lot of this work happening and, you know, will be happening more broadly in the industry, but I was able to see this work happening in a very queer perspective.
Damien, we've run out of time, unfortunately, but great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Iris.
Thank you. Damien O'Meara, lecturer at the School of Media and Communication at RMIT University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.